fire this guy.
A war breaking out. We'll keep our eye on that situation, friends. Good Monday night from the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest. I'm Jeremy Scott. Seems like saber rattling, flexing of the muscles. Nothing really more than that from my independent observation. U.S. Saying that it plans to impose limits on China's artificial intelligence and supercomputing firms. The new rules could be the most sweeping action taken yet by the Biden administration to thwart China's access to American technology that powers data centers and supercomputers. That reported by the New York Times. And I'm forever amazed at the advancements in artificial intelligence and in automation that have been made seemingly by the week and by the month and by the year. We're certainly advancing. Meta's using some new AI software. We, of course, talked about the Google Project Lambda and whether or not it went sentient. And there's so many other things happening on the artificial intelligence front, but there's so many other angles to this technological takeover, as we'll call it here tonight on the program. It's not just artificial intelligence. It's things like automation, which of course in my industry, the radio industry, is very, very easy to automate. Number one, most of the elements that we play are already built in, and then it just takes the human putting ourselves right in the middle, sort of speak. But we can put ourselves in the middle when we're not here live, if that makes sense. I could record this. Now, I am sitting here live, and it is October 3rd at 6:33 p.m. Pacific, 9:33 Eastern. However, I could have recorded this earlier today and played it back, and you wouldn't know the difference. That is a very simple form of automation, but it happens in many other industries. Of course, the car industry, many manufacturing industries, other things such as gene editing, and even 3D printing, the ability to literally print stuff through a computer and a 3D printer, nanotechnology, quantum computing. If you look around, technology is all around us. And I, you know, I've had a few days as I begin a new chapter of my life. I've had a few days to kind of just sit back and look at things from afar. And I've come to the realization about how lucky we really are with the technology. And the technology certainly is constantly changing, and seemingly it's hard to keep up with. And we all get frustrated sometimes when we get new pieces of gear and we don't know how to use it right away. But there's a learning curve with everything, sort of speak. But there's also many positives that can be used with artificial intelligence and other automation means that can, you know, especially in today's day and age, keep people in business who maybe can't afford to pay people, or nobody wants to do the work. So the choice is automate it or go out of business. So I found a man by the name of Sylvain Rochon, who wrote a book called Engineering Paradise, Are You Ready? He is a solution-focused speaker, an author, a futurist, and an entrepreneur. What do you think about this whole world? By the way, welcome to the program, Sylvain. It's just an amazing technological world that we live in. You would have to agree. I mean, you wrote a book about it.
Well, yeah, it's amazing. But what we're currently seeing or experiencing is just the tip of the iceberg. You've probably heard of the singularity, right, as a concept.
Yes.
Which is where, you know, things, evolution of technology becomes so fast that we can't even deploy things fast enough. And we're kind of on the cusp of that, just a few years from the singularity, based on that definition. So what we are working on, let's call it the labs or the entrepreneurial table, the engineer's table, is far more advanced than what you actually see in market, because the time to market is actually pretty long. In part because of red tape, regulations, and just needing to fund productions and scale up and that kind of thing, that takes time. But the discoveries using AI, leveraging these technologies, is just keeps going on at a faster, faster pace. So what we're seeing out there is very low tech compared to what's possible already in the lab.
Are we going to be able to keep up, you think, with this evolution?
As human beings working, no, impossible. AI can evolve and become faster as things progress and iterate fast. AI can. So part of what I talk about in my talks to kind of illustrate the future, let's call it just that, is that we've come to a point very soon where human beings are a detriment to productivity, meaning that AI is a better way to produce or to manipulate resources than human beings can. And therefore, if we are part of the workforce doing stuff for productivity's sake, we actually are slowing down GDP production. So that means
basically where the company's losing money by having us in there instead of a robot.
That's right. And therefore, why are they paying us the salaries, right? If we are not productive enough. The consumers want customization and low cost. They want high productivity and efficiency in companies. And so that's what we want to pay for. But at the same time, companies, if they want to provide that, they have to employ more automation and more AI. But that's how we get the income to actually buy the things, right? So we're coming to that moment where we have to rethink our whole economy. We cannot persist as a civilization where people are gainfully employed in order to survive and be able to live in society. We have to change that mindset. It won't work.
Yeah. And what about the unpredictability element as well? As these innovations continue to roll out, it brings on a brand new element of whether or not these things are safe or ethical, just depending on how far this goes.
Well, as a free-thinking, free-loving innovator, I hate to say this, but regulators have a role to play in this. They have to be quick about it, and they're not quick at all right now, even the good ones. But we have to put some rules around the creation and deployment of AI, for example, right? So that we don't have malicious AI that take decisions that'll bring us to the in the wrong direction, like kind of building Skynet kind of story, right? So we want to avoid that. That means we have to have rules in place. We have to have perhaps AI police, really seeking out artificial intelligence that are either were designed malevolent or they have learned to be malevolent over exposure to us idiots because they're learning from us, right? So it's a whole new virtual game that most people don't see that's currently happening right now.
There's actually, I guess, some movements that are underway in order to, or some calls maybe is a better, more accurate way of stating that there does need to be some sort of regulation in case somebody gets, the super code and these things start to replicate and they have evil intentions.
Yeah, thankfully there are smart people on the planet that are seeing this coming. There have been plenty of discussions, serious discussions, for example, at the World Economic Forum in 2017 and every year after that, another world organization where they've been thinking, okay, like we have to put some rules, some new Asimov rules, if you would, in place for AI creators. I mean, there's no, these bodies generally don't have any enforcement power. But they've been like think tanks, like very prominent think tank, putting two heads together and thinking up different rules that have generally been accepted by the major high tech companies on principle, not because they're forced to, but just on principle. And that's been helpful. But governments themselves, they're the ones that have legal authority to kind of change laws to actually make some enforceability into it. They're so slow that they're just now probably thinking about it. And they're about 5 to 10 years behind here. So it's a precarious situation. Thankfully, I have hope that there's always a balancing act within the private sector, between people that are creating AI that will help us progress and protect us, and those that are malicious, because there's always these battle between enforcement, protection, penetration, and all that stuff. And that's going on right now in the AI field as well. And it's not perfect, but it served us well over the generations. So that's a thing. I would just rather there would be laws in play right now. But coming close to singularity, our governing system is also obsolete and just can't move fast enough. We'll have to have AI actually doing that at some point just to keep track.
You also speak about how to prepare for this future. I guess that's both a good and a bad. Can you give us your perspective on that, both on the good and the bad?
Yeah, on the positive side, like the title of my books, like Engineering Paradise, that's a positive mindset, right? We can create the paradise that we are thinking about, a world where we are exclusively consumers, right? Productivity and work is all done by automation, and we restructure our governing system to modernize it. Instead of a 19th century design system, we have a 21st century system. The economy is redesigned. Like, we can redesign all these things, learning what we've learned and like restructuring it for the future. We can do that. And that's what I talk about in my book. Like, these are things that we can do as entrepreneurs and as authorities to create something. If we don't do that, that's where the bad comes in, because we know that our current systems are corrupt. They are misused. They are by design. They are generating bad results. If we just replace the individuals with hyper-intelligent robots and AI, well, it's the same design. The robots are just going to do bad things, corrupt things faster and better. So that's terrible. That's going to get us into a really, really deep shit. So we have to not just think about, well, let's keep the same systems and make it more efficient. No, we have to redesign it. It won't work the way it is. People are suffering. They're already suffering. We can actually resolve things like hunger, longevity. We can cure genetic diseases now. We can remove the need for money, essentially within 10 years if we really wanted to. But we're not doing that because we're stuck in those systems that were built in the 18th and 19th century that are based on scarcity and no computing power. It's just maniacal.
What are some other ways that automation is rolling out, particularly the job killing kind?
Well, the first step that we've kind of licked is like the very repetitive type of jobs. You know, it's been in manufacturing for such a long time, like robotics and AI there. No, people don't even think about it because it's automatic. We've gone to different steps. Now we're getting to a point where white collar jobs, most of them are at risk. In fact, in McKinsey report from 2017, which is already 5 years ago, they said that about at that time, 60% of all work tasks could be done through AI and automation. And now it's closer to 80% of all work tasks. And that includes hyper-creative ones. You may have been aware of a software called DALL-E that can create art off of just a couple of words. And it can create like amazing pieces of art. We can use AI to do all sorts of creating things. We've had Watson create trailers for movies, from Hollywood movies, and people didn't know it was an AI that created the trailers. Very successful movies, creating music along with other human players and things like that. So if we can have professional level music created by AI and art and all that stuff, that means that the AI can also be creative in governance, in decision making. The only reason why we're not really doing any penetration in the market in those areas is that we want to keep those for ourselves because we're afraid of giving the reins over to the AI for decision making. But the private companies are going to be the ones that are going to be doing it. In fact, there's a company, and I forget which company now, it was about 2 weeks ago, they put out the press release saying that they have elevated to the CEO position an AI. So they have an AI that's acting as a CEO now.
This is a company in China, right?
No, I believe it's American.
Okay.
Yeah. But the Chinese, they've probably done it already. I wouldn't be surprised. I just don't know about it. They are way more adventurous with AI than we are.
Yeah, apparently a Chinese game company has appointed the world's first humanoid robot as its CEO. Her name, Tang Yu. Sophia was another one of those robots that that got a name for herself a couple of years ago. Okay, so talk about where we're really headed with this stuff. And throw quantum computing in there and nanotechnology because, you know, that stuff is really getting intense here.
Yeah, like just pointing on nanotech, like nanotech is really technology of the small, of the very small. So if you think about the vaccines for the COVID vaccines, and now they're Melitor vaccines and whatever that are using mRNA technology, that's nanotechnology. It's a type of nanotechnology, right? But we also have little tiny organic or mechanical robots that can go into the bloodstream. That's also considered nanotechnology. It's a bit still macro, but it's part of that. We're reprogramming stem cells to attack cancer. We're doing all sorts of things to the body for medical purposes that are nanotechnology. Quantum computing itself, let's go back to the body a bit just to give you an idea. We are 3D printing. You mentioned 3D printing a little bit earlier. We are 3D printing tissues in hospitals that are matching the skin cells of a patient, like a burn victim, for example, right? We're printing what do we call bio ink, which is essentially stem cells within a formula like a liquid, and we're printing skin, living skin, and then patching it up onto people. We're working on 3D printing hearts and kidneys and livers and different things like that at a small scale. So eventually, they can go into the hospital for a transplant within the next, let's say, 10 years, probably not more than that. You need a kidney transplant. They take some of your stem cells, they grow them, they 3D print you a kidney, and then they implant it on you without using a donor. And it's your own cell, so there's no rejection. So these are things that are a combination of nanotechnology, 3D printing, biotechnology that we are using in hospitals right now and in the labs. And we're also doing cultured meats. You've heard of that, where we're growing meats out of cells without killing the animal. That's kind of a derivative of these type of technologies with organic tissues. We're not really using quantum computing for any of that because that's really for specific types of problems like mathematical problems and computing problems that typically a traditional computer won't be able to tackle. And we're getting really far ahead with that. I'm excited about it, but quantum computing won't be something that a normal person would ever use, most likely. But they would probably use organic computers. And this is essentially kind of a copy of what you see in life, like in animals. You can create a computing devices like an artificial brain using organic matter. And then you can use that. And these organic computers, they don't look like animals. They would actually look like a normal computer. They're just using the molecules that are organic. they wouldn't look like a puppy. don't take out of your mind. But you can do microchips that are way smaller than our smallest microchips using that and make them more reliable. That's something of a ways into the future, but that's probably more exciting. Ultimately, you know, creation of life. It can talk about all sorts of stuff like that. We are considering aging more like a disease now in certain circles not something that's inevitable. If a child is, let's say, 20 years old or younger, most likely they will never die of old age. I got about 50-50 chance of dying of old age at 47.
Everything that we've been talking about so far, it just brought me a thought, possibility of an AI-fired 3D-printed gun. Whether or not that could be replicated or reproduced, basically automatically.
Well, what you're pointing out here is the flip side, right? Everything that I was talking about earlier is all things that could be super beneficial for humanity, healthy and stuff like that. But then turn that technology and with the desire to do harm, you can do an incredible harm. Like you said, like, you know, killer bots, what do we call killer bots? Like AI implanted into some kind of weapon. That's a terrible idea. For all sorts of reasons, especially if it's deep learning, if it learns on its own. We know that part of the reasons why when there's a conflict that there's not so much death is because a person kind of holds back and doesn't want to kill another person, right? It has this moral compass. Even if it's an enemy, there's a holding back effect because you're confronted with the person. The closer you are, the harder it is to kill or harm somebody because we don't like it. It causes trauma inside us. AIs aren't programmed with that problem. So you give weapons to them, you send them along, and the human beings are kind of hanging back and command and control 2 kilometers away. Massacres occur that would not occur if you had soldiers on the ground. You're saving soldiers' lives, but you're killing a lot of people. And then what if one of those runs amok? Then you have to hunt it down and drag it back. It can communicate in the network to others. It can teach others its misbehavior, most probably. So then you have a unit or an army that is misbehaving. Well, what do you do then, right? It's a big problem we should not go into. And yet China, Russia, U.S., Israel, among others, are investing a lot of money into these things. And it's going to be a problem.
Sylvain,
point is that civilians can develop this and kind of do this on their own, not just the militaries.
What do you think of the wild possibility that maybe the aliens built some of this technology or gave us the blueprints for some of this technology?
I don't know about that. I mean, there's certainly a lot of speculation about, you know, crash landings and reverse engineered tech that was left behind by the U.S., by the U.K., Russia, and whoever else. I haven't seen good proof of that. A lot of people are talking about it. As a scientist, I mean, I need to have more than just a testimonial or two of experts to see that this was actually fact. It's possible. Aliens that are able to come here, that I believe aliens have been here, I mean extraterrestrials specifically, for thousands of years. That means they were able, 1,000 or more years ago, they were able to cross the distance between the stars. Okay, so fathom that. We're not even close to being doing that in a reasonable amount of time. That means they are at least 1,000 to 2,000 years ahead of us in technology, automatically. So they're here, they're observing, they're playing with us perhaps and interacting with certain people. They can do basically anything with us if they wanted to, you know, and we wouldn't even know about it. They can give us technology or not. We wouldn't even know about it probably unless they intentionally make a show so that we know that they exist, which is possibly the some of the reasons behind the crop circles, some sightings, and perhaps even some crashes. Maybe they intentionally crash something so that we have some story and some tech or whatever. I can't have any proof of that, but I know they are watching and they are benevolent. And the only reason why I know they are benevolent is that they have no reason not to be, no rational reason for them to be otherwise. And they haven't really tampered with us in any significant way that would make us believe that they were malevolent. So they probably waiting for us to do something, which is why me and some partners and
hundreds of thousands of other people are supporting the construction of an ET embassy. So we can show that we are willing to have a conversation as rational individuals, and hence the ET embassy project that you've heard of.
Now, what do you mean by embassy?
Literally an official embassy sanctioned by the United Nations Vienna Convention. Like an embassy just like a U.S. embassy or Thai embassy or Canadian embassy. So a place where diplomats with immunity would be able to come to accomplish diplomatic missions on extraterritorial land. That is the definition of an embassy according to the law. That is what we're building.
And you've got a conference coming up, I see here, that's happening virtually online, I believe, this Thursday.
That's right. It's a Thursday between 6 and 10 p.m. Eastern. We're going to give an update to the crowd, and there's speakers and interaction possibility, Q&As, networking. We're going to give an update about the NBC plans, the city planning around it, where we're going, the timelines. Like the embassy will be open if everything goes well with the feasibility studies and kind of land studies, and the there's no tardiness in the political side, in about 2030, that's when the embassy is going to be open.
Going to be actively communicating with ETs? That's the hope, at least.
Well, not me. The purpose is to build the embassy so that the world can use it to interact. The world leaders can use it to interact with the ETs. We're just funding it. We raised $50 million US for the construction over the number of years. And we're applying the efforts with the United Nations now and certain country leaders to gain extraterritoriality and changing a bit of the Vienna Convention to accommodate for an extraterrestrial civilization. Because it wasn't, when it was written in 69, it didn't accommodate for nations outside of Earth atmosphere. These discussions are already ongoing. They've been ongoing since 2019 with different with the UN and some prominent politicians of different nations. And once we get these steps done, then you'll have an announcement from the United Nations saying, okay, X country is building an official embassy with extraterritoriality, which is the official, what you would call the land. It doesn't belong to the nation anymore. It belongs to whoever goes to the embassy, which is going to be aliens. That's all in machinations. It's been going on for a while. You're going to have the United Nations in some countries declaring this a go within the next couple of years, probably. And essentially, it's our organizations that are pushing for this and making the discussions. But once they decide, like the nations and the United Nations kind of decide to go forward, it's going to get a little bit out of our hands.
We got to tell people where they go to get the tickets to the Extraterrestrial Diplomacy Conference. That's this Thursday. Where do they go, Sylvain?
Well, they go to our website, conference2022.allianceforet.org, four as the number four, conference2022.allianceforet.org. Go there, buy your ticket, and join us, and you'll receive all the information you can ever want.
Appreciate you coming on the program, Sylvain Rochon. His website, sylvainrochon.com. If you miss any of it, it's at paranormalradio.com. Have a great night.
Thanks much.